This is the January 15 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Logan Kimmel at RoachAg.com. He's out of Naperville, Illinois. Jim McCormick is here from AgMarket.net in Barrington, Illinois. And Mike Zuzulo joins us from Atchison, Kansas at GlobalComResearch.com. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org. Mike Zuzulo, let's get a list of items. We'll start with you, of things that we should discuss today. What are you thinking about?
A very welcome Thursday close heading into the end of the week, Todd, with the soybeans posting an outside week higher, new two-week high after making new two-week lows after WASD numbers. I'd like to break that down a little bit.
And Jim McCormick, on your list?
Probably need to talk about the balance sheet adjustments that the government made on the corn and the carryout feed and residual and what that may mean down the line.
And Logan Kimmel.
Yeah, after going over all the numbers with the report here from Monday, I think it's a good opportunity to talk about expectations in the marketplace going forward for producers on what to be doing with the remaining old crop they have and start looking at some new crop ideas.
Let's begin with the Monday reports. It was an interesting report related to both the crop production and the WASD figures, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, along with the winter wheat numbers and the grain stocks. Mike, I want you to run through the winter wheat planted acreage numbers for me, if you could, really quickly, and give me a quick assessment of that. And then we'll get into the meat of those reports that took place on Monday.
Yeah, you bet. 33 million acres all winter wheat, Todd. The trade was pretty much on the low end of that number. In other words, they were thinking 32.4. So while it's a lower number as a whole over the last 5 years, it was still above the average trade guess. So that kind of put some different tint on the reaction in the market. Hard red wheat stayed pretty even with last year at 23.5. SRW the same, 6.14, right there with last year. We did lose some in white wheat, with no surprise there, with the upper Midwest plains issues that we've had weather-wise. They came in at 3.36. Since the report came out and those winter wheat numbers have been digested, it's really, the trade, I think, has really gone back to what's happening over in the Black Sea and what's happening with the crude oil market. They didn't even really look at the fact that winter wheat drought issues on Thursday, when we got the weekly update, are still posting 19% above a year ago, and we're looking 14 days out in hard red wheat belt country with very little precip, coming off 60 degree temperatures, heading into 20, 30 degree temperatures. So still a lot of weather, I think, to trade in that wheat.
Let's turn your attention to the balance sheet adjustments. Jim McCormick, I know the one thing that we have been talking about all week long is the 1.3 million acres adjustment for harvested acreage. It was upped by that much by USDA. That pushed total production over 17 billion bushels for corn. How do you look at that number and evaluate it as it's related to marketing plans?
Well, there's no doubt about it, Todd. You look at that number, it definitely surprised the market. You saw also an upward revision in yield, slight adjustments to last year's crop. The reality is you're pushing your crop over 18.5 billion bushel supply. I know, Todd, there's some people don't like the number. Some people don't believe the number. I view the number as a U.S., you know, kind of how you're going to have to watch an official officiating the NCAA football game Monday night. You may not like that holding call, but if they make the holding call, that's the call you got to go with. This is a number we're working with right now. And if, you know, the trade is under their perception, we've got a huge supply of corn, unfortunately, an oversupply compared to the current demand. Export sales have been phenomenal. Ethanol is there. But unfortunately, we've done such a good job producing this crop, we are going to have a burden supply. That feed number, Todd's a number that makes me really, really worried. I just think, unfortunately, the government does what it does. Big yield, big feed and residual number. But that number just looks like it's a sore thumb to me. And that feed and residual is overstated. And that carryout, which is over 2.2 billion, I think it essentially creates closer to 2.5 as we go through the marketing year, and that is going to be a wet blanket on any kind of rallies we try to attempt.
Wow, that is a big number. I'll come back to you on that in just a minute. I do want to give Logan Kimmel a chance to hear his reaction to those numbers and how you have evaluated them over the ensuing 3 to 4 days from the corn or the soybean side.
Yeah, no, Jim is spot on there. Very good points. Clearly, the trade was thrown off guard on that. And I think another, concern on top of those numbers is just the amount of unpriced old crop corn on farm that, you know, whether that be on basis, it's going to get rolled or just eventually sold over the course of 6 months. I think that might have more pressure on any sort of a rally in the corn market on old crops specifically. You had a market for 4 months that, you know, maintained a range and held on breaks due to the strong demand. But I think what we found out, despite that, is just the massive supply. My fear would be that setting the tone here for maybe the next 2 to 3 months until we have another catalyst or potential catalyst to reverse that trend. You throw the spec funds who were fairly well on the sidelines going into that, and more likely than not taking a short approach here going forward using that information. So as Jim said, the numbers are what they are, and if you don't agree with them, you do have to understand that I think that the trade is going to use those going forward.
Mike Suslow, if you could put two things into context for me. Jim talked about the feed residual number. It did go up by 100 million bushels. That means consumption went up 100 million bushels. However, when you look at the season's average cash price, USDA, despite this 2.2 billion bushel carryout, a 200 million extra bushel put into that ending stocks from December to January, raised the season's average cash price by a dime to $4.10 from $4. So that either says they believe an awful lot of corn got sold at a much higher price, well, and or that an awful lot of feed, that extra 100 million bushels, is actually going to create a lot of demand, one of the two. And I'm wondering how you can square those things.
Yeah, I can't square the feed. I think Jim, you know, nailed that with the idea that the feed and residual is a leftover number. Yeah, they put feed, but then there's the residual, and it's what's ever left over in the bucket to make the carryover number. I think there's a third option here, Todd, and that could be that the exports are not going to back down. And I think this is where what Logan talked about and Jim talked about, I'm going to run right in between and try and find a hole here with the idea that if those Illinois and Iowa numbers are too high, which I still think they are because of the fact that the yield reductions were not enough to explain a lot of the ground pile losses, and Iowa's 97.4 harvested to planted number is way out of whack. Illinois' 98.2 harvested to planted is way out of whack, and Nebraska's 97.2 harvested percentage to planted is way out of whack. I think we're going to find out relatively quickly through the spreads and through the cash price, with Illinois being the epicenter, whether USDA's number is right or not. And I find it very interesting that we saw Thursday's export sales very strong, but then we saw a lot of purchases in beans and corn, and Saudi Arabia is out there for over 500,000 metric tons of wheat. Is that war fear? Are they discounting the WASDE report? I think we really got to keep our heads up right now.
You think it will be a basis fix in this case? I think that's what you're telling me. Or will it be the futures markets that manage to suss out what this crop size really is?
My running assumption right now is that after the commodity index buying from the record high precious metals prices, once that gets done here in the first couple weeks of January, the futures market will be more of a fund selling market mindset than the cash. And as you say, the basis will be the keys to whether that crop is really out there in the corn or not.
Okay, so Jim McCormick, given that, and I don't know whether that would be your expectation for futures to drive sideways to lower, maybe. I don't know whether that's what Mike, if you can correct me if I'm wrong on that. And then the bases would have to do the work, but it's still going to have to do the work at a lower level. Is that right?
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit challenging, Todd. You know, the next 90 days is going to get really interesting. You know, the one tweet you saw a lot on Monday was the bridge payment loan was just wiped out in 1 minute of the trade of the market going down on Monday. Now it's going to be a situation with where we're sitting at March corn at 420, East corn trading here at 450, but that 420 corn, I think Logan put it out, you know, 65% of this corn sitting on farm, how much of it is unpriced? Our commercial guys are telling us somewhere around 50 to 55% of the corn market's unpriced. The real question, I think, in the next 90 days is going to be up to the banker. You got a lot of guys, Todd, trying to finance the 2026 crop. We've got a balance sheet that got really ugly really quick, despite how strong, as Mike pointed out, the export pace has been. So the question, I think, in the cash market's going to be, is the banker essentially going to force the producer to sell more aggressively the next 90 days of the crop that's in the bin because he doesn't want to finance the 26 crop when he's got half of the last year's crop on price? And they can say that is just too much risk with the balance sheet. And if they're forcing that farmer to sell the grain to generate revenue, the basis isn't going to have to do any lifting. It's going to stay soft. If the farmer can hold a lot tight and the banker doesn't panic, and this cash market continues, we'll have to see the basis improve to keep that river market flowing because these exports have been phenomenal. And so far, they remain very strong here.
Okay, so Logan, on the flip side of that, agricultural economists prior to the release of this USDA report would say of the bridge payments, do not use that to make sure that you can hold on to the old crop corn, that it's best to go ahead and make sales. I think actually most of our analysts were in the same boat at that point. Should they at this point use the bridge payment in a different way? The bank still knows it's going to come, but I guess and it depends on when debts are due or when they have to make a payment, whether it's a land payment or something else. And unless that check comes faster than we expect, I think by the end of February, so it's a month and a half away still, it seems like it could be a rough 45 days, I guess.
Yeah, and I think you brought that up. I believe the last time I was on here, that the announcement had just came out, and we had discussed that a little bit in detail. It's going to be different from operation to operation, but generally speaking, I think we're in an environment right now of, from a marketing standpoint, of you got to live to see another day here. Whatever you got to do, it's not good markets. Where a lot of operations are in a tough spot due to the high input cost and low prices. So I think when we look at the amount of old crop unpriced, payments coming in or not, you still got to market what you have left. And I think you can now look at this old crop situation here in the corn and look for areas that if the market were to rally to, might be areas that you want to let go of some of that old crop to start paying some bills. You've got a zone that the market traded for 4 months. I'm guessing in this March corn area and 430 to 435, you're probably going to hit some resistance there. That might be areas for producers to put together a plan and lighten up on what they have left here throughout the next few months. But I agree, the next 90 days are going to be interesting just with now the next big thing being any South America weather. But ultimately planting and growing seasons here, how to navigate that with what you have left. I think it's important to sit down and put a plan together because we saw how quick these markets can change here on Monday. And we're dealing with such low prices year after year here now for a few years. It's certainly something you want to be on top of and have a plan in place.
So, Mike, I think the producers, particularly with corn, have a twofold problem. They have half of a crop left to sell. They have a new crop in corn to market at some point, and there's a lot of time left, but that crop just changed dramatically in value, potentially, particularly if Jim McCormick is right, and we see a $2.5 billion bushel number for the old crop carryout by the time we get to the fall. How are you talking to producers about both of those crop years and what they should really be thinking? It's hard to sell two crops at one time, especially at a low price.
You're right, but I do think that there is a window here with the corn and the beans. We just made the highest level in new crop beans compared to new crop corn since early December on that bean-corn ratio. And I think if I were in the shoes of the farmer right now, which we all three, four actually, you, Todd, because you have farm ground, all four of us are kind of in those shoes, I would go to the banker and the financial lender and say, I'm ready to lock in new crop beans to help finance my 2026, give me more room to maneuver on my old crop corn as a result of that, because I can lock in a profit. And that's what was so impressive on Thursday. And what I mean by that is, if you have any old crop beans left, and you know, let's say USDA is right, so you should have 70 bushel beans and 220, 240 bushel corn after the report. And so you're looking at $700 plus of revenue in old crop beans and $950 in old crop corn. You're not that far away to go ahead and let go of more beans in the old crop, let more beans go away in the new crop. Why am I saying that? Because the way the USDA report was structured, beans actually got the worst report. We lost 60 million bushels in exports, and we gained 3 million metric tons in Brazil crop. And there's really no weather in Brazil right now to lean on, whereas there is weather in Argentina and the corn crop to lean on. So I really see the idea that what we're finishing out this week with is beans leading the market higher with the worst report of all when it comes to both the U.S. and global ending stocks. So if the corn's going to go lower, my bet is it's going to be because of beans. So get ahead of the beans, get profitably sold in the new crop beans, and try and buy some time in the corn.
Jim McCormick, if the news stories are correct, most of what happened on Thursday in the soybeans was based on the Trump administration expectations to set blending quotas for biofuels sometime by the end of March. And most, I think, are thinking that the administration would put in volumes that are close to the 5.6 billion gallons that they have proposed, maybe as low as 5.2, but at least in a range that would be supportive of soybeans. Is this where producers should actually say, look, I've got beans, as Mike has said, that I can make it through the spring at least by making some sales, forward sales, that is, and get myself in a position where I'm not completely leveraged by the time I get to the fall?
I agree with Mike. I mean, the beans rallied today on the you know, the charts look a little bit better on the beans. He's right. It was a very bearish report. Bean oil is leading us up. It was a very impressive day on the bean oil, though. You know, it is interesting, Todd, how the market reacts. The number pretty much came out at the high end of what the government already said they're proposed, and they acted like it was something above and beyond. But you got the positive news, and I agree with Mike. I mean, I've been telling our clients, look, it's been a very ugly week on Monday, but you still got the Argentina weather to go. You still have the Brazilian safrinha crop to go. You still have our crop to go. The world corn supply, Todd, is at 10-year lows. So I'm in 100% agreement with Mike. If I got to try to calm my banker down, calm my fiscal nerves down, I move the beans, because you got a wall of beans coming from Brazil. And our guys tell us China's bought about 12 million metric tons of beans. I would argue the buys, Todd, were all political buys. It wasn't an economic buy. Brazil will sell the beans cheaper to the Chinese, so they may be done. But that corn story could change if any one of these countries, us, Brazil, or Argentina, have a problem with that tight world supply of corn. And you're already seeing an incredibly strong export number. That number keeps up. You hopefully will at least get a rally to get this corn back to the high end of the near-term range. So I'd be moving the beans and trying to hold on to the corn, but I'd be realistic. If you can get corn back up near 450, spot corn could not get over 450 since the first week of June last summer with what was a 1.5 carryout. You're now staring a 2.2 carryout in the face that could grow even more by late summer potentially. You got to respect that, but I think like Logan said, 435, 445 to 450, you want to sell it, and then maybe use options if you want to play the what if we turn hot and dry this summer.
And Logan, how are you thinking about marketing of old and new crop soybeans still?
Well, I think just to kind of explain and reiterate, you know, it on this new crop, it's still early in the ballgame, and I know we talked about how bad and bad things look here after this report and the concern on old crop. But I think on the new crop, you have to be optimistic if the market is presenting opportunities, and I agree 100% in the beans, maybe implement that in your marketing strategy and give this old crop some new more time, because I think if you see positive headlines come out from here today, you start getting a little more chart support on this November of contract new crop beans, and we start visiting some prices maybe we saw there throughout December on the way down, I think that would be a prudent thing to accomplish in your marketing, is having a plan and use strength in a market that you can go out and sell forward to get sales in the books and a stake in the ground. That would go for new crop corn as well. We've got a lot of time. If we have some weather this spring or summer, you might have more opportunities down the line, given how strong our demand is. It's just right now, getting from A to B, from now until planting, you got to look for opportunities that you can take advantage of and give yourself a little more time. If you want to implement options after a sale, you most certainly can do that. There's tools to do that. But I think having a plan this time of the year is a good marketing move.
Hey, Mike, one of the things that came out earlier in the week that I have not seen follow-up on was related to Iran and the president of the United States saying that any nation trading with Iran would have a 25% export or tariff put on the exports coming into the United States. I'm wondering how the Chinese might view that over time. And if it would be imposed upon that nation. I'm guessing that both Russia and China are the targets of the 25% tariff.
Yeah, I think that was a big deal. And the market saw that. I don't, like you said, I don't think they really followed up with it because of the drinking the news through a fire hose. But it was very quick to be seen in the bean market as potentially price bearish and negative. Because of China's reaction, China was all over the Asian press saying that the U.S. was doing wrong by doing this and instilling their weight behind things inappropriately. At the same time, we saw the cattle market really get excited with the idea that Brazil would be in the same camp as China and be hit, and therefore their beef couldn't get in here to this country is cheap. So I tell you, Todd, in 2026 for me, I just have to, because of what we talked about a minute ago with the financial side of the equation, I just have to build into my risk plan that China will continue to disappoint us on ag trade, because we see geopolitically President Trump economically and foreign policy-wise continue to take pages out of Ronald Reagan's playbook. The Latin American blockade, Reagan did that in 86. By 89, Noriega was gone out of Panama. This is going back towards the higher inflationary time periods of the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. So negative China, positive inflation is kind of my general mindset.
How do you put that into context with China as it's related to next fall's exports to China? Are they at zero, at half where they are like this year, or will they make the 25 million metric tons?
I'm not forecasting 25. I think they themselves on total are still down below 100. I would be surprised if we could break 20 in our marketing year for China. I think it goes back to the wheat and the crude oil historically are the best inflation plays after precious metals. And look what they've done this week. They've ripped the doors off the bull rocket at this point. And, you know, you're looking close to $100 silver now.
In our marketing year, you mean the current marketing year at 20, so 12 plus another 8 by the time we get to the end of the marketing year, or you're looking at 20 for the following market?
Thanks for correcting me. I would say 20 in addition to 8. In addition to 8, so I'm saying 4 from the past marketing year, and then maybe another 20, 22, something like that.
Okay, All right. So what else do we need to take up, Jim McCormick? What's kind of been on your mind? What have producers been asking you? What are they really worried about?
Well, right now, I mean, what they're really worried about is how they're going to make money. I mean, you know, that, and it's, you know, honestly, it's a hard, we're in a hard situation right now, you know, where we're at. I've been telling constant clients, so it's mid-January. You know, there's a lot of water to get under the bridge. You know, the China deal, it could change in a heartbeat. You know, I'm very skeptical about the 20, 25 million, whatever it was for the next 3 years, Todd. My guess is we're going to have to it'll be part of a renegotiation when it's all said and done. I mean, look what's going on with Venezuela. Venezuela was selling China a lot of crude oil. Trump essentially told Venezuela, you can't sell it. How does China handle that potentially? I just think in general, this is all going to get renegotiated, but that's going to add to the volatility. I do think you're going to have opportunities, and I've just tried to counsel farmers to not panic on report days. You got to let the dust clear and kind of see where it's at. You know, we are very dry here in the eastern part of the Midwest. We'll see what happens, how this all plays out. And, you know, the game plan right now is to figure out to the best of your ability what your costs are, where you need to market grain. And that way you have a decision to be made so you can make the economic decisions to pull the trigger and try to take some of the emotion out of it. Because it's going to be a very emotional year because you're going to feel the pressure. If I don't sell it right, if we end up with a trend line yield, history says prices are going to go a lot lower. But you also, you know someone's going to scream drought, Todd, in the eastern Corn Belt, especially as dry as we are in the parts of Illinois and Indiana. And, you know, especially our producer where your listeners are here in Illinois, it's going to be very hard to sell it if it's very warm and dry in Champaign, per se. So I look for a lot of volatility this year, but the game plan now is to try to come up with an idea where you want to market grain so you can execute it if that opportunity presents itself.
Logan Kimmel, look forward to the prospective plantings report. That would be survey numbers coming from the USDA. But even before that, the annual USDA event that will take place in February, they'll drop some numbers in, kind of our first chance to see what they really have in mind. Maybe the second, because they would have put them out in November or early December as well. I don't recall whether they did that or not for acreage. What do you think the spread might be for corn versus soybean acres?
Oh, it's a tough call. I mean, I think you guys want to spend the money and plant corn versus beans. Taking a look at these new crop prices, I'm probably guessing still just more corn. That can change with these new crop prices having changed quite a bit since Monday. That's kind of our thoughts, leaning towards more corn.
Yeah, so still in that probably 94, 95 million acres. I suppose, I don't know, Mike Zuzlo, these would be numbers you would look at too.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that in your part of the country, you probably see more corn. But I do think we need to remember back in 17 and 18, bean acres were 89, 90 million acres. And the bigger those corn acres got these last few months, the more potential bean acres, along with the problems in cotton country and LDP in cotton country this year. This is not boding well for small bean acres. And so that's another piece of the puzzle, I think, that you diversify into not holding both crops, because it does look like it could be a race to the bottom as far as if you're fiscally strapped. Soybeans look really good. And a lot of producers the last 2 years in a row have been pretty happy with their bean yields compared to their corn, from generally speaking, from what I've heard.
Let's get a final comment from each of you now. Jim McCormick from agmarket.net. We'll start with you today.
Well, definitely was a tough report we had earlier in the week. The bean market seems to maybe put a little bit of a double bottom in. We've got some positive news from the government, potentially on renewables. I don't panic producers out there, but be ready to sell this rally, at least near term, is my recommendation.
Logan Kimmel from roachag.com.
Grain producers, keep your head up. Livestock producers, specifically hogs, we've seen a massive rally here in these summer months, north of 107 on June and July. Got an opportunity to lock in some cheap feed. Maybe take a look. You see these summer hog markets move north of 110, layering a floor. We've seen what can happen in the grain markets. You've caught up to the cattle now, and if you've got hogs coming off here this summer, keep an eye on some June and July contracts.
And finally, Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com.
Yeah, I like what Logan just said. I just hit the 95 mark on April hogs. That's our hedge target to get something done, Todd. Also, as you talked about in the cattle, USDA did raise production for red meat by about 1.4% for 2026 commercial red meat production in the report. So they're seeing bigger production, not less production. So big heads up there for Q3 and Q4.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists. They include Jim McCormick, Mike Zuzulo, and Logan Kimmel. You have a great week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.